This is Karen Lyle with Sailsport Talk and a Sailing Science Spotlight. It's easy to see how a boat sails downwind. The wind pushes on a sail that's kept almost flat, and the boat zips along with the wind behind it. But how does a boat sail into the wind? The secret is air pressure. When a sail is angled into the wind, it curves. Some of the air streams along the inside of the sail, called the windward side, and some of the air streams along the curved outside of the sail, called the leeward side. The air traveling along the leeward side, remember that is the outside of the sail, has a longer way to go than the air on the windward side, the inside of the sail. So the wind on the leeward side has to go faster than the air on the windward side, and the air gets thinned out because it's going faster. When the air gets thinned out like that, the air pressure is higher on the inside, and that makes it a force that pushes the boat a little bit forward, but mostly sideways. If that were the whole story, a sailboat would keep slipping sideways and never get anywhere. But boats have rudders and either a keel or centerboard which extends straight down underneath the boat, and this makes it resist the slipping sideways. The result is that a boat is given a thrust by the wind that is more forward than sideways, kind of like when you push down on a watermelon seed and it shoots forward across the table. You can figure out how a sail works by putting your hand outside the window of a moving car. When you hold your palm open and flat to the wind, your hand will be forced back. This is how a sailboat moves forward when the wind is directly behind the boat and the sail is fully let out. Now, turn the side of your hand toward the front of the car and cup your fingers. As you try out different angles of approach to the wind, you will feel more or less pressure on the palm and back of your hand. That's how changes in the fullness of a sail can change the degree of forward motion created. But you can't sail directly into the wind. That is called the no-go zone, because you don't go anywhere. The sail works best on your typical sailboat when it is at an angle of 45 degrees or so. This is Karen Lyle with Sailsport Talk, and this has been a Sailing Science Spotlight, giving a shout-out to the Physics Department of the University of California at Berkeley.
I'm sorry. I'm back in a broom closet, and as soon as I said, all right, it's the most overmodulated horribleness. I apologize to our guest, Karen Lyle. First of all, Karen's always here at 9:40 on a Tuesday Pacific time for SailsportDoc.com. Karen, thanks for putting up with this janky studio.
Oh, one of the six that we have in this beautiful building that's filled with celebrity signatures. I'm game.
Well, you're a trooper, so I want to say hello to our guest, Ian Ferguson. Ian Ferguson is a very experienced sailor locally, but now with some plans at his young age to do some ocean voyages as well. And Ian, thanks for being in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how did this all get started with this sailing bug you have?
It all started with my dad and my uncle. My uncle had a Catalina 34 that I kind of grew up sailing on, and my dad bought a little 14-foot sailboat he raced on in college, and that's kind of where it started, and it's gone from there.
And you grew up around here?
I grew up in the East Bay.
In Orinda. Mm-hmm. Are you a matador?
I am a matador.
All right. Miramani High. I'm from Richmond. Through the tunnel on the other side, or take the dam road if you want to go that way.
San Pablo Dam, way better.
Yeah.
And that's actually where you sailed, was San Pablo Dam, right?
That's where I grew up sailing.
With the small dinghies.
Yep, didn't even realize there was this great sailing venue, the San Francisco Bay right here. And I don't know, it was about 10 years ago, I was like, why don't I go sail out there? There's some big boats out there, and changed my life.
I mean, I don't sail, but I get those pontoon boats, those party boats, mm-hmm. and I take them out on the dam. That's a good time. You have a couple of beers and throw a couple of, you know, rigs in the water.
Oh, yeah.
Any boat on the water is fun, I think. It doesn't matter what the size or whether it has sail or motor. You still got your winds and your tides. And we just met at the Ensenal Yacht Club, which has been a great support to you on this Transpac race.
Very much so.
I think it was Saturday night, and we were talking about your voyage. You're the youngest skipper and youngest boat owner, and you actually won first place in your division and two other trophies. Can you tell us, first of all, just a little bit about the trophies that you won, and then we'll have a few more questions.
I'd have to say thanks to my crew. They really led to everything that happened. We took first place in our division 9, and we raced against some good fun boats. We paired up with Azure and Oaxaca. Azure is a Cal 40 out of Ensenal, and Oaxaca, I think, is out of Tiburon, Santa Cruz 50. They definitely pulled their own weight and helped us win this trophy as well. Azure took second, Oaxaca took first, and then we took first and combined to win the Trisail Storm Trophy.
Are you, you know, for me, it's one thing to get in a boat that has a steering wheel and a motor. I'm fine with that. But the wind, to me, seems so precarious and to master it. And we've been doing it time immemorial in human history. But to me, it seems kind of an intimidating thing to take a ship into port just on wind. I mean, when did you start to learn the nuances of how each little sail does its own job?
I'd say that was about 10 years ago. For like the first 10 years of my sailing, I knew what a jib did. I knew what a mainsail did. I knew what a tiller did. But the nuances of the trim, no idea.
And they call it a boom because if you don't duck, it hits you in the head, right?
Yeah, boom, you're off the boat.
Have you ever gone in the drink?
Not because of the boom.
Okay.
But
voluntarily?
Well, two involuntary moments, but that was...
Was it capsizing?
Okay, let's bring that up to, like, definitely in the 50s, probably, with the capsizing.
Wow.
But. Well, I learned also on dinghies it was a Bahia 14-foot. You know, and definitely with those light boats in the centerboard, you're going to spend some time in the water, and you need to know how to right the boat. So that's part of the process.
Yep. I bought my Flying Dutchman. I'd say I'd spend more than half the time of me sailing that boat. I was on the side trying to figure out what I was doing. It's if you don't capsize, you don't know where that edge is, you can't step your game up and improve.
That seems like kind of a high price to pay, but you got to have no fear, right?
Well, it's a dinghy. They're kind of designed to be flipped.
How do you flip them?
Right them or flip them?
Well, let's just say it's up. It's completely upside down, and you're in the water, and you've swam over, and now you've grabbed, I guess, to the side of it. Is there a little rope, or what do you do?
You kind of climb up on the hull. You stand on one of the side rails, and you grab the centerboard, the fin out of the bottom, and lean back, and just use your body weight that's now asymmetric to the hull, and you slowly bring the boat back up.
Karen, you've done that?
I have done it, and I just want to mention that in 55-degree water, we actually can only have about 45 minutes in the water before hypothermia, so it's a little different than, you know, the Caribbean or Zanzibar for sailing. You really feel the pain.
Real quickly.
We're speaking with Ian Ferguson. I'm not a sailor myself, but I've always been intrigued with sail voyages, and I love reading books about Magellan, the Bounty, all these things. What is the thing that inspires you to just take off and with an empty horizon like that?
It's knowing there's land on the other side of that horizon, and all the days in between that are just magical. It's nice taking a step back from this busy world and understanding that this is the real world that's mm-hmm. going on. Nature is providing the entertainment, and it was like a never-ending National Geographic show, the full trip across the ocean. And
mm-hmm. Some of it might not be magical, though, right? I mean, you got some squalls and some loneliness, or what do you got?
One of my crew members, Veronica, mentioned that even though we were out there in the middle of the ocean, it never felt lonely. That was a powerful phrase that popped up to mm-hmm. me.
I agree with that. I mean, you're surrounded by sea life as well. And we were discussing an experience you had with whales. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, yeah, it's we got a little bit low in our primary water tank, so I had to bring some jerry jugs up, and I was filling the forward water tank, and I started hearing these clicks through the hull, and I was never heard that through my boat before, so I was a little freaked out because I was trying to figure out where it came from, but no matter where I was in the boat, I could still hear those clicks very audibly. So I poked my head up. Two of my crew members were the previous owners of my boat that owned it for 12 years. So I figured they'd probably know something about this. And they're like, oh, you should look over the side of the boat. I look over and there's these pilot whales, like 20-something feet long, and there's about 30 of them, all like kind of breaking out of the waves that we're surfing down. They're playing with us. And they were darting in and out between my rudder and my keel. I'm like, these animals are probably close to the same weight as my boat. And it was both spectacular and terrifying at the same moment, knowing that we're so far away from shore and we're kind of at the mercy of these creatures now. We're in their world.
And so the clicks were their sounds to each other, their communication.
Yeah.
And the hull was amplifying that for you.
Yeah. One of my friends said that they were talking to the boat, trying to like communicate with us.
So it was more clicks instead of like that type of thing.
Yeah, it's more like the dolphin clicks.
Huh.
I think the pilot whale is more. It's related to the dolphin pretty closely. So
I had an encounter going down the Pacific coast to Puerto Vallarta, where we had megapods of dolphins, and there were literally thousands of dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably seen that as well. You are at the mercy of the ocean and the marine life and their goodwill towards you, basically.
And they seem to be just as smart as us, too. So it's literally in their world and their domain, and they control.
Let's say you had a moment of peril and you sprung a leak and you got to get into a life raft. What type of communication do you have? And, like, how long? What would be the farthest away where you would say, you know, we can get a helicopter from Argentina out here or something? I mean, like, well, what are your options?
So I was told that once we hit 350 nautical miles offshore, we are now out of Coast Guard helicopter range.
Mm.
So at that point, they then send a C-130 with a care package, and we're probably getting picked up by a big container ship or a, like, trolling fishing vessel, something like that.
Do you try to stay in the shipping lanes for that purpose?
Oh, no, I stay outside of the shipping lanes. They're
too dangerous?
I purposefully avoid shipping lanes. I'll stay 10 to 20 miles away from them.
Well, in this race, you can't use an engine during the race. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that means that if you were with no wind and you were in a shipping lane and a container ship was coming along, you might actually be hit by it because you don't have any other means of navigation or power.
Fortunately, I have AIS, both transmit and receive, that they know I'm there. And I can actually hail them through the AIS system and let them know that, well, they already know that I'm there and they know my boat speed and my course over ground. So if I reach out to them, they could be kind and divert slightly, like a half mile or a mile away.
Right. Being a skipper of a ship, as you said, I mean, they're your friends and they're your compatriots, obviously, but somebody has to be in charge. And every once in a while, maybe you need a little let's just call it tough love to get something done. Is that something that came naturally to you, or is it kind of hard to boss people around?
Everyone says I'm like a natural leader. I feel I don't really yell much on a boat unless I need to raise my voice to be heard. I'm generally pretty polite. I had a moment where the previous owner of the boat was my navigator, and he sat me down before the race and was like, "You are the skipper. You are now the boat owner. But believe me, I will always have an opinion about what you're doing with my old boat and how it's being sailed." So I had to kind of live up to that expectation. But we didn't have any of those moments. So it was kind of nice.
And you didn't get any of the thing like, "What do you know, kid? I've been out here 40 years. Did you get any of that?"
That's more like prior to the race and after the race, where like the old salty dogs don't know exactly what I'm about, and they make an assumption, and I still defer to people that have way more knowledge than I do.
It's a good thing to do. And you have some plans. This is not your only ocean race that you plan on. This is the first of many. Tell us what you plan to do in the future.
Possibly thinking about doing TransPAC 2021 or 2023, and from there jump into the East Coast of Asia and do like the Hong Kong big boat series to the South China Sea circuit, and hopefully the Sydney Hobart.
So you want to dominate the Pacific Rim is what you're trying to say?
Yeah, or sail a full Pacific Rim. I like this ocean.
Speaking of which, the name of your boat means reckless, or tell us a little bit about that.
My boat sailed from Norway, and it's a Swedish-built boat, so it's like, okay, it's kind of a Viking boat. It's 44 feet long, 8 foot four on the beam, so it's this really long, narrow, needle-looking of a boat that everyone's been calling it a Viking ship here in the bay. So I wanted to stick with a Norwegian theme, like Norwegian name for the boat. So I was typing in names into Google Translate, and I was like, relentless, persistent, a little ruthless, and the name Nautilus popped up. And my Norwegian crewmates didn't tell me that my boat name truly meant reckless until 3 days out into the TransPAC. And actually, the name is more fitting for my boat and, I guess, myself than I ever thought.
Perfect name. We've been speaking with Ian Ferguson, and we just want to say thanks for coming on the show. Best of luck, and come back after your race. We'd love to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Karen, as always, great visiting with you. And as I said, once again, thank you so much. The listeners don't know, but I know we're kind of in some scruffy digs here, so thanks for suffering with us.
Your scruffy digs are better than a lot of others.
I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.